Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donald on a Kitchen. We get together once a week here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames. We are in the building underneath the old historic Ames Pantorium sign. Yes, it is. If you want to find us.
We're behind it. We're behind it.
Ames Pantorium. This used to be a dry cleaners. It did. But it has been repurposed, recycled and repurposed. And now it is the home of Community Radio for Central Iowa. And about this radio station, KHOI just celebrated its 5-year anniversary. This been around for 5 years, Donna.
La 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 la
la la la la. And a fine radio station it has been. This is Community Radio. We are put together by volunteers and people that want to be on the radio. So it's worth lending your ears to this radio station and worth lending your support. So I have a little bit of a birthday recap here for those of you who may have missed last Saturday's.
Oh, yes.
We had music.
A cake potluck.
We had a cake potluck here. Thank you, Donna, for having a cake potluck, because what is a birthday party without cake? So we had people bring cake, and thanks to those who did.
And the Hy-Vee donated a nice large sheet cake.
Which was good because there was a lot of people. So,
yeah.
So Mark Harris brought a cinnamon roll cake. It was gobbled right up.
It was yummy.
Stephanie Bates bought a white cake. Thank you, Stephanie. Donna Prisgintas, a lard pound cake. It's a good thing you made two of them because that went fast, too. Your lard.
Yes, we like our lard in Iowa, don't we? And it was lemon yuzu on top. So
ooh,
it was
lemon
good.
Lard pound cake. It also got snapped up. Cynthia McClurg made a fine fruit cake, and I brought a treacherous devil's food cake.
You always it was have a, yum.
Yeah, I always got to
right.
have a little bit of
and you
of
had
chocolate.
Beets in that cake, right?
That was a beets cake.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a good recipe. It didn't go, oh, beets, yuck. It was just like... really nice deep chocolate filling.
It was deep chocolate. And I put a little, some, just to surprise people, I sprinkled some little red, what do you call it, nonpareil, so little cake candies on the top mm-hmm. to make it look like black,
birthday,
black
birthday,
and red.
Yes.
Birthday. It was very good. There was a wonderful concert, too, outside the radio station by
well,
Sam
and before
Salomon.
Before the outside, we had the Children's Chinese Choir.
Yes.
Just darling.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Chi-Town, a group of Indian engineers from ISU playing Bollywood music. Really fun.
That was really fun. It was a fine way to start off a birthday, and we had a good time. The cake was great. So happy birthday, and we're looking forward to another whole bunch of years for this fine radio station. So another thing to sort of report on here. This past Saturday at the Downtown Ames Farmers Market, there was a salsa contest.
With all of our tomato glut. It is just tomato heaven these days.
It is. Lots of tomatoes for sale. People are getting creative. And the food contest, the cooking contests are becoming more and more popular. People come and bring their best, and everyone gets to sample. Everyone gets to vote because there's a judge's panel of judges that kind of give the professional air to things, but there's also a people's choice. And so people get to taste all kinds of things. I got information here from Lojean Peterson, the market manager. She said, we had 21 entries for
ooh,
our judge's choice contest and 16 entries for the people's choice. Some of those are overlapping, of course. That is a lot of salsa. I didn't get to sample everything, but I noticed there were all kinds of samples. There was a whole string, a rather plethora of salsas happening there. And there were wide varieties. There was something called peanut picante. I did taste that. Peanuts. It was kind of pureed up, but it had a salsa, peanutty salsa taste. Peanut picante.
There was so no tomatoes in it.
Well, it was kind of mushed together, so I don't know if it did or
well,
not.
Well, I mean, you know, technically salsa means sauce. So,
yeah, right.
You know.
There it was. It was very good.
Did you know that salsa now outsells ketchup in the U.S.?
And it should. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
It a wider range of stuff. So there was that peanut, and there was a mango, there was peach, there was a beer salsa. Always good. There was a roasted garlic salsa, a corn and bean salsa, raspberry, pineapple mango, and many more traditionals.
Who won?
Oh, okay. Judging. First place in the judge's choice. Lee Vondrak, spicy pineapple mango salsa. Second place.
Sounds good.
Second place, Jared Jensen, salsa verde. Third place.
Now, I do like a salsa verde.
Yeah, I do too, yeah.
Wonder if he used tomatillos.
Probably. Probably not green food coloring. I wouldn't think so. Okay. Third place, Jay Frederick, raspberry salsa. That sounds good too. And the winner of the People's Choice, Jared Jensen with the salsa verde.
There you go. Okay, good.
It looked like everybody was munching away quite well. I didn't get to sample all of them. Congratulations to all the winners. Congratulations to all the cooks who brought the wonderful stuff. Lo Jean said because it was such a wonderful turnout, judging was a lot of fun.
Well, good.
Yeah, it was.
Want to know what my favorite salsa is?
What is your favorite salsa?
It's a little trick I like to do. So I just chop yellow tomatoes and peaches. And then, you know, a little onion, a little cilantro, some lime juice. But the onion-peach combination, because they're the same color, people think they're just going to eat the yellow tomatoes and then the peach flavor is in there.
It's fun. Do you put any cilantro in it?
You can. Sometimes I go basil or basil and cilantro. Uh-huh. Depends on what I'm serving it with. I mean, you know, peaches and basil are... Do you make any peach basil jelly? You could.
It's really yummy.
I thought so.
I have. Peach and basil together does go very well together.
It's very nice.
I'm not much of a salsa maker. I make some, you know, every now and then, but I love trying different kinds. That's good. What I like about salsas is kind of picking the fruit and the tomatoes so they're not too mushy. I kind of like them in little chunks.
Once
you start mushing them up there, they turn into soup, and I'd rather have chunks.
Well, and like, for example, a gazpacho, which is kind of like a salsa, but a little bit more, the cold tomato soup. I make a really simple gazpacho where I cut up the tomatoes, chop in the basil, maybe pour just a tad bit of vinegar on it, salt and pepper, and olive oil. And then if you let the tomatoes sit for like a half an hour, they just juice up. You know, which if you're trying to make a salad, you're always fighting that. But if you're trying to make a soup, it works marvelously.
Good. Oh, there was we have another food event at Alluvial Brewing Company, north of Ames here. There was a debut of a new food truck called Cornbread.
Corn, B-R-E-D.
Cornbread.
Mm-hmm.
And cornbread, they serve lots more than just cornbread. It wasn't just corn. This is a barbecue bunch of folk.
Oh, yeah. Serious barbecue.
And in a past show, Donna mentioned that she didn't know if any other place in Iowa people would stand in line. We talked about a restaurant where people would stand in line and wait for minutes, hours to... Although, granted, there was music, there was very good beer, there was good company, good weather.
And lovely weather, yeah.
Lovely weather.
So you could drink beer. They served 500 people out there, and I think we stood in line almost 2 hours.
Yes, I believe we did. Now, granted, we had a wonderful time chatting.
Oh, right, because all your friends and neighbors are there.
Yeah. But would people normally do that? But I don't know. Here in Iowa, not only are we polite, we are hungry. So we had a good time. We will look into more.
Well, it's when I went out to the opening of the new cafe called Provisions, and of course, both the cafe and Provisions do not take reservations, which means you often have to wait up to 45 minutes. And when I was out there, I did marvel that this community is willing to do that. I mean, if you were in a more urban area, I suppose if you went into the restaurant and they said, oh, no, the wait is 45 minutes, you probably would just go down the block to another restaurant. But people here, we wait.
Here we grab a beer and get in line and talk to our friends. And it was a fine, fine gathering. Yes, it was. And for being a food truck, and you imagine that they served that many people, I was amazed. We are going to look into the cornbread food truck folks and find out more.
It's a new addition to our food scene. And also, I don't know if we mentioned this, Lana, but at the Foodies and Brew, Jethro's showed up.
Oh, another barbecue place.
Yeah, so we're going to have another new barbecue. They are opening on the 17th. Oh, that would be in 2 days.
Uh-huh.
And they're in the old Aldi space, kind of down by the Cineplex. It's going to be a very large restaurant. But I have to say that the chicken wings that they served at Foodies and Brew, they were really good. They used a rub technique. So these guys are serious about their barbecue, both of these, the cornbread people and Jethro's.
New people to check out, and they're the cornbread truck. That's cornbread, cornbread, as in, you know, referring to the barbecued pork, of course. The truck is just a great, great bit of artwork, too. So,
oh, yeah, it's a mega, mega food truck, beautifully designed, I must say. It's an impressive rig.
More about that later. But coming up, everybody has been talking about the eclipse.
Oh, we don't know what. I believe that Ryman Gardens is having a sort of eclipse gathering for the event, which is next Monday. I'm not certain about the time. I know it's in the afternoon. We'll have to pay a little more attention to that to know. And for the Ryman Garden, they said, you know, warning, everyone must wear proper eclipse glasses.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We are not to look at the sun without glasses. It is very bad for your eyes. But I was reading this. Annie Dillard went to see, who's a wonderful writer, went to see an eclipse, I don't know, in the 80s or something like that. And I was reading her description, which I will read to you now. But after reading it, it made me go, oh, maybe I want to go see the total eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
So Annie writes, I turned to the sun. It was going. The sun was going. The world was wrong. The grasses were wrong. They were now platinum. Their every detail of stem, head, and blade shone lightless and artificially distinct as an art photographer's platinum print. The color has never been seen on Earth. The hues were metallic. Their finish was matte. The hillside was a 19th century tinted photograph from which the tints had faded. And all the people you see in the photograph, distinct and detailed as their faces look, are now dead. The sky was navy blue. My hands were silver. All the distant hills, grasses were fine spun metal, which the wind laid down. I was watching a faded color print of a movie filmed in the Middle Ages. I was standing in it by some mistake. I was standing in a movie of a hillside, grasses filmed in the Middle Ages. I missed my own century, the people I knew, and the real light of day. So she just talks about apparently. It, of course, it's all very quick. It's a matter of minutes. Mm-hmm. But there is the, you know, the fading and the return and the apparently there are atmospheric changes that are, of course, the color things change. But supposedly a slight wind blows up because of, pardon my lack of scientific understanding, but it sounds quite life-changing.
Yes, and people talk about that. If you look into history, people got really scared when that happened.
Well,
and I had no doubt.
At least we know it's coming. We know what it is. We're kind of all looking forward to it with excitement. But I'm guessing, because, of course, I've never seen a full solar eclipse, but like maybe it's kind of like the first time in us non-ocean-going people. So the first time I was in a place in the ocean where I actually went scuba diving, and you go under the surface of the water and you see that this beautiful part of nature is completely different than anything you had ever imagined. It is life-changing. So apparently, also earthquakes do that to you.
Have you ever been in an earthquake?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
I lived in California. And so you are nice, solid earth that we count on for everything, just being, you know, the stability under our feet. All of a sudden, it's waving like the ocean. It tricks your normal logical thinking. Of course, you know, within a certain amount of time, it all fades and you go back to thinking of the earth as really, really solid. But when you go through an earthquake, even a gentle one where it kind of wobbles and you realize it's alive, it moved, the earth moved under my feet.
Ooh.
And we're not talking about an erotic experience. It was literal.
Yeah.
I don't know. This coming eclipse sounds just enchanting. I hope we all take a little time to appreciate it.
Yes, many, many people are going to be heading out of Iowa. Well, actually, Iowa will see it a little bit.
Yeah, I think I looked at a map that said 450 square meters of the corner, the south. West corner mm-hmm. of Iowa mm-hmm. will actually be in the path of the full eclipse.
And we'll see a little bit of it, but not the total bit of it.
Get partial eclipse here. So,
but people, I kind of worry about everybody jumping in their car and heading into this space here for these few minutes of absolutely. Who knows what? Not so much. The Earth and the Moon, they know what they're doing. I'm not worried about that. It'll come and go. But when people start gathering in bunches, I mean, people in their cars are going to start tooting at one another it's going to be exciting.
I think cities that are in the path of it, which near us would be Kansas City, St. Louis, and it carves a whole swath right across St. Joe, Missouri, all across Missouri, and some of the larger cities that, you know, they are planning designated, like the event at Ryman Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So people will be gathered together to watch it and... people have been, you know, preparing for this journey for a while.
Right, right. I mean, in the Middle Ages.
Sounds some of them are going to be kind of like tailgating. You show up fully equipped.
I heard so.
You get out, you experience your 2.5 or 3 minutes. But then I'm sure there's this, you know, as it approaches.
Mm-hmm.
More like what we'll see here.
We'll see next week. It'll be the talk of the town next week.
Oh, yeah.
I just think of all the... people's reactions to things like that in the past have been not so good. I mean, they thought, oh, we're going to have to sacrifice a cat or something.
Because they didn't know what it was.
Right, right. Everybody's scared.
I don't know. I think solar eclipse watching is probably better than tornado chasing, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I hope so. Well, we've had enough of a warning, and people are planning for it. So let's think about the... sun and the moon and our place in the universe.
Yeah.
We might feel a little small.
I hope so.
Okay.
I think we need to be humbled a bit occasionally,
And looking at the news here recently, I think we should be humbled and shocked and rather appalled at the white racism and things that have been popping up in towns, and especially in Virginia this last weekend. A woman was killed. People were hurt. There was a rally of white nationalists get this. There's a bunch of white guys who think that things are not going well for them, but then they tend to blame other people. And not very good things happen. This is not good.
Yeah. I saw an interesting interview this morning. It was very touching. The mother of the young lady who was killed, she went in a public place and gave an interview where she said, of course she was mourning the loss of her daughter, but she also said to the young man who was probably about 20 years old, she said, I'm sorry, you have ruined your life. It did not get you what you thought you were going to get. She said, I am sorry for your mother as well. It was very, very touching.
Yeah. We are human here. We are human. And
let's be kind.
Let's be kind. And speaking of Missouri, we're thinking of going to Missouri to look at the eclipse. The
Are you thinking of going?
No, I'm not going. But I think
is
my husband,
Joe thinking?
My husband is.
Okay. Oh, I might go.
So the NAACP has a travel advisory warning for people of color about Missouri. I mean, why would that be?
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
In
dangerous.
2017, a travel advisory warning people of color that Missouri may not be safe.
Right. And last year, the American Civil Liberties Union actually had a similar advisory ban for the state of Texas. This is our country, folks. And we're not treating each other very well. We're not being kind. So does the eclipse make us crazy? Or what exactly are we doing to
Let's
ourselves?
Let's hope it brings out our better nature.
Right, right. So when things like that happen, I tend to want to consider beautiful things. Here's a little bit of music, a poem by Robert Burns, sung by Anne Percival. And yes, remember, Robert Burns is a European white guy. We can all make beautiful things.
The sweetest hours that e'er I spend were spent among the lassies old. There's no but care on every hand. Every hour that passes, oh, it signifies the life of men, and were not for the lassies, oh, green grow the rushes, oh, green grow the rushes, oh, the sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among the lassies, oh. The worldly race may riches chase, and riches still may fly them all. And when at last they catch them fast, their hearts can ne'er enjoy them all. Green grow the rushes, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh. The sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among give me a quiet hour at end. My arms around my dearie, oh, and worldly cares and worldly men may gay a topsy-turvy, oh.
Listen to KHOI 89.1. This is Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. That was a poem by Robert Burns sung by a fine musician named Anne Percival. She is part of the contra dance band Wild Asparagus. She does a lot of good things well. I like her stuff a lot. And speaking of music and dance and things in the kitchen, this next little segment is from a past Donald on a Kitchen show from our archives. We're talking about tomato technology because that's coming up in the kitchen. And it starts out with a fine little tune called The First Tomato Polka.
Thank you.
talking about what to do when you've got too many tomatoes. Donna gave me, and I will pass this on, Donna gave me a really good tomato processor. I had one of these a long time ago.
Non-electric.
Yeah, it's a plastic Italian-made tomato press.
Got a little crank it.
Crank it out. Crank the tomatoes through. The cooked tomatoes.
Clamp it to your tabletop. Mm-hmm. It has a little suction clamp.
That works beautifully. It's very well made. It's called a Velux, V-E-L-U-X. And I noticed on the one that Donna gave me, it says Super Velux. So you can find it on the internet, actually, V-E-L-U-X.
I think I got mine from like Williams-Sonoma or something like that. You know, they're not that hard to find.
I have always enjoyed doing that. Like I said, by straining off the tomato water and freezing that separately.
The reason I gave it to Lana is because I have not used it, and I know she will. So it's the purpose is to de-seed and peel, right?
De-seed and peel. And it's a sturdy, sturdy little thing, and it will. It ends up with seedless and skinless tomato sauce, and then I suppose you could cook it down more for paste. And it also works beautifully for apples. Hmm. You can make wonderful applesauce without
cooked
apples, and you don't have to seed the apples. You don't have to peel the apples. You do have to take off the stems because somehow the stems kind of get stuck in there crossways. But it's thank you, Donna, for this great thing, and I'm sure everybody out there has their own little tomato technology
The reason I don't use that one is because I've been using this, what Mama used to call the ricer, which is this cone-shaped thing in its own stand that's about, maybe 12 inches high and has a pointy wooden pestle kind of thing that you just roll around and then it all dribbles through and holds back. I use that a lot for the applesauce. I use it for jams and I would use it for the tomato. Now, you run the raw tomatoes through the...
No, cook them.
Cook them and then you run them through the...
Yeah. I don't think it handled raw tomatoes, but cooked apples, cooked tomatoes, cooked anything else, it works great. It's a little fussy to clean because it's got some moving parts in there, but it cleans up beautifully and
well. If you're
does
doing
well.
Lots, then it's definitely worth it.
Be prepared to make a mess. That's good. And I want to mention also, and I've been doing this for years, oven roasting tomatoes.
My favorite. Talk easy peasy.
Yep. Yep, there you go. Now, this is the idea of capturing all of the juice in the tomato. So either cut the tomato in half or cut it in quarters and set the tomato on the skin. So you've got these little...
On a greased...
cookie sheet.
Yeah.
Again, with some sides on it, folks. Don't let this run off because you want all that juice. These candied tomatoes, by cooking them from a hot oven and reduce the heat. I've been doing this for years, and again, it is better than
this. Is really easy, guys. Catch this one now. Try it, Lana.
Right. You take medium-sized to small-sized tasty tomatoes, and this calls for 4 pounds or more. That kind of fills.
And I did find that it's important on a sheet to make them have relatively uniform size so they dry at the same.
Yeah.
Like if you got a bunch of big ones, put them on one sheet. Or
cut those big ones into quarters.
That's true. Make surface area. Because the small ones will burn up and dry up too much by the time the big ones have settled down.
The idea is we're not drying things here, folks. We are oven roasting. You want all the juice to kind of cook into the tomatoes. You end up... Mary used the term glop before, or paste.
Glop.
You end up with glop, but this is not pureed together. This still is recognizably tomato chunks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, four or more pounds of ripe tomatoes, olive oil, it calls quarter cup.
You don't want
half
it cup. Too oily, but enough so they don't stick to the pan.
Yeah. And also, you want to drizzle a little bit over the top when you get it all done. Mm-hmm. I do, and then salt and pepper if you like, garlic if you like.
I also use the olive oil spray for that too.
Good
really
idea.
Easy way.
Good
to make it not too oily. Mm-hmm.
So you cut those tomatoes and put them skin side down on the pan. And you can
salt and pepper.
And
I also sprinkle some dried basil on them or oregano or marjoram it cooks right in and it's delicious.
Mm-hmm. And here's the trick. You preheat the oven to 400. Put the tomatoes
in. Yes, get the numbers right. This makes it so easy.
Okay.
And start at 400.
Set your timer and go do something else. Start at 400
and then bake 30 minutes and then come back and turn down the heat to 350, bake for 30 minutes. Turn it down to 300, bake for 30 minutes. Turn it down to 250, bake for 30 minutes. Until the edges of the tomatoes are slightly darkened, you can tell them kind of cooking a little bit. Then turn off the oven, prop the door open a little bit, and let them to sit and mellow as the oven just slowly, slowly cools off. And it's, the recipe here says 4 to 6 hours, which is a great way to meet to say, go off and forget it for a while. And then long about time that you're ready to go to bed, you look in there, oh, I got to do something with the tomatoes. And you can scoop up these tomatoes, put them in a – I put them in a freezer bag. You can either just put them in the refrigerator in a glass container. I put them in freezer bags. They freeze beautifully. So there you go.
It's true. And you can – keep some in the fridge to eat right away.
Do that.
And it has all kinds of uses over just fresh cooked noodles, on toast, just any way you can imagine. And I think it's the fastest, easiest way to deal with a glut of tomatoes.
Yeah.
There you are, tomatoes. And that recipe that I talked about, roasted tomatoes, or actually it's called candied tomatoes. I got that recipe originally from a book by Lynn Rosetta Casper. She was a radio personality, probably still is on NPR. And she calls them candied tomatoes, not because there's sugar in them, but because they taste so wonderfully sweet when they're done.
Right, that's the idea of roasting. And it's true for many vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
It concentrates the flavors. Mm-hmm. You don't lose the juices. They sweeten up through that roasting process.
Great. That recipe is on the Donalana Kitchen webpage that you can find at KHOI.
Say the timing one more time. You start at 400, you go a half an hour. You 350, another half an hour. 300, another half an hour. And then 250.
Another half an hour.
And then you just
turn off the oven and prop the door open because I think you want to lose a little moisture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then forget it for a while and then put it back together. So you can find that at khoyfm.org.
It's really simple.
Yes,
that's the kind
of
cooking I like to do.
Yeah. You can get rid of a lot of tomatoes and tomatoes that are, let's say, they're not all that pretty. The ones
right,
that have got dings
imperfect.
In them.
Right. You just cut the bad spots out.
Yeah. Use them all up.
Yep.
Oh, what else is going on in the kitchen, Donna?
Oh, well, we are in harvest season, and I've been doing a lot of peaches.
Peaches.
And tomatoes. I've been making pizza sauce for Helen Gunderson out of her tomatoes. And my technique for that has been cut the bad spots out, cut them in half, throw them in the pot, cook them till they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take too long. And then I put them through my mother's conical ricer.
There it is again.
So you end up, you know, pulling the seeds and the skins out. And then I put them in the crock pot and cook it down until it's the thickness that I want. Usually 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, depends. And all I've been adding is fresh basil, a little pinch of dried oregano, salt and pepper.
Oh,
and a splat of olive oil.
Splat and glop. Oh, we use such good terms around here.
Yeah.
That's good. Oh, and another, I mentioned that Velux processor, or I'm sure there's other processors for mushing vegetables. I use mine also for applesauce, and that's what I did this weekend. I made some applesauce, so there.
But you did crab apples, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes. I recommend if you have a crab apple that tastes good, use it. I have
there's lots of varieties, and people have planted a lot of crab apple around thinking, it's a decorative tree. But you can do more than that with it.
Give it a taste. There's a variety called the Dolgo crab, G-O-L-G-D-O-L-G-O.
And Dolgo?
Dolgo.
Okay.
That's the name of it. And the crabs themselves turn into this dark, dark magenta, not just the peel, but the inside is also pink. And when you make applesauce, which is tart and lovely, it is also an intense pink. It's wonderful. I do like that crab applesauce. It gets us through the whole winter. Now, my husband likes it just straight, no sugar at all, and I think it sort of like puckers you up a little bit too much. So I do like to add a little bit of sugar to it, or you can mix it with some other things. Mix it with a different kind of apple. But right now, I've got a whole bunch in the freezer. I put it again, cook it down, put it through your favorite processor, and then put those scoops and scoops of applesauce into freezer bags and put them on a cookie sheet and freeze them flat, because it does help with storage that way. And then you can take them off the cookie sheet.
That's true. That's one thing I learned, to be sure to flatten the bags while they're liquid, right?
Otherwise, you got these little lumps.
Yeah.
It also helps to freeze things quickly and evenly. And so there you have it.
I also did peaches this week again. And the thing about peaches is, you know, they go so quickly. It's like the tree comes and bam, you have a lot of peaches to deal with. And I must say, while I was in the kitchen all week, kind of off and on, you know, because it's like the roasting of the tomatoes. It's something you put in the pot and you let it go a while and you go do something else, or you put it in the crock pot to cook down and forget about it. But so I was alternating between the peaches and the tomatoes and then tasting them afterwards. And it was such a delight. You know, it's something you can't buy, because most of my produce was coming as a gift of Helen Gunderson from her garden. And when you have that kind of quantity, if you were to go out and buy the tomatoes or the peaches all at about $2.50 or $3 a pound, you wouldn't be cooking them like this.
Yeah.
So it is it's an old time feeling and an old time flavor, and you realize that this is how people used to eat all the time, these true clear flavors. Like with the peaches, I put nothing in them, no sugar. And I cooked some of it down in the slow cooker to peach butter. Nothing. I put a pinch of pepper and a pinch of salt.
You're big on salt and pepper.
Yes.
And I think I would.
Well, you don't want them to taste salty, but it does a tiny bit, even in sweets, makes the, you know, really perks the flavor up. And, of course, I love putting a little black pepper in all my fruits.
Yeah, that's something I've learned. A little black pepper does some nice things for different kinds of fruits.
And I've just been enjoying this kind of the rhythm of cooking and preserving. Now, I'm not saying it's not canning. That's a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can every now and then. I make pickles, and I can some tomato juice, because it is different, and it's different, and that's okay. This time of year, work now and then be like the ants that have put things away while the
grasshopper was fiddling. Right,
yeah, we're pretty smug there in the wintertime.
Yeah.
You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen and more about this fine radio station and all the good programs produced here at KHOIFM.org. We're going to listen to a waltz, the Tom Bigby Waltz.
A waltz. You know, I love waltzes.
Tom Bigby, I believe it's a river in Texas. We're back. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was the Tom Bigbee Waltz, and thanks to engineer Evan Taylor. A correction, the Tom Bigbee River is not in Texas. The Tom Bigbee River is in Alabama. So write that down if you ever need to know that. That was a wonderful waltz by fiddler Lisa Schnechtenberger. Wonderful, wonderful name. Good fiddler. Well, you went to a PFI field day.
I did. I went to a practical farmer's field day at the home and farm of Kevin and Renee Dietzel. It was grass-fed, dairy-based cheesemaking. Ha-ha! Some of my favorite things. And they're a beginning young farming family, and their children were there. I don't know which was cuter, the cows or the kids, you know. And they were all of a whole, it was just a lifestyle going on out there. And the kids were chasing the ducks, and the cows were chasing each other. And at some point, the dog and the son, Sterling, who's 6 years old, was so, you know, we were touring the farm, and Kevin was talking about how he manages his pastures. And in this drought that we're having in Iowa, it is a bit tricky. And, you know, the electric fences and where the water lines go. And he has about 80 acres, and we were out hiking around, and Sterling's following along, and occasionally he'll take the microphone and he'll say, "Yes, and my troops are stationed over there, and we're going to have some grenade throw." He was into some military things. And then here's his hideout over there. And he was just so confident and exultant in his life there on the farm. You know, this is not an urban child. You can tell he's not sitting around watching video games. He's out there playing. And his younger sister, who's 4, was, you know, kind of dancing around with some other young children and climbing on tops of the hay bales, as were the young calves. Mm-hmm. And the mixture of Kevin's cows, he's breeding to try to find what works best on his pastures and our, you know, the way our weather is and who does what. And so he's got some Normandy that he's breeding in, which is a kind of a dark brown black brindle, and he's got a lot of Jersey. So it's a very mixed colored crew of cows, about 25 to 30, with some young ones and some old ones, and he does not dehorn them as well. Which I wholly agree with, and he says it really causes no problems, maybe in that size of herd, and also the fact that the herd is, you know, they're not confined. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're confined with electric fences, but they move a lot, so mm-hmm. they're not restless and, you know, prone to aggravating each other because they're good. Crowded. It was beautiful, and it was misty out there because it was at the end of the rain. And his farm is called Lost Lake Farm because at the turn of the 1900s, at that century turn, it was a rather large lake. I have some 100 acres or something. I've forgotten the number, Kevin says. And so people were deeded land out there, and sight unseen, you know, they paid for the land and they moved out to settle it. And lo and behold, they get there and their acres are under a lake.
Oh, sounds like
what a land swindle was that, right?
That sounds like a deal in Florida. I don't know.
So they were the ever resourceful pioneers. They dug a canal and drained the lake.
Lost Lake Farm.
And of course it made good farming because it has the soil is the bottom sediment. So, and it's quite pretty out there.
And so these contented cows are making some contented cheese.
Oh, yes. We toured the good for cheese the making facility. And, you know, Kevin makes a lot of right now curds and mozzarella. That's a beginning. He is working on more advanced cheese forms. But we found out from his description that he makes cheese 3 days a week. It's a 22-hour process.
Ouch.
That is a long day to make those mozzarella curds. But I knew he'd been doing this, but it's such a small production at this point. He's making one called an Alpine-style cheese. And I finally was able to get my hands on a half round of it, and oh boy, it's good. We're very encouraged to have a cheesemaker in our community. It's up by Jewel, and as Kevin, you know, grows and expands his abilities, mostly it seems like he needs more refrigeration and more investment in cheese molds. But I believe Kevin is going to grow into a very fine cheesemaker.
It's nice to have that in the neighborhood. And that was a part of a Practical Farmers of Iowa field day. If you'd like to find out more about field days, well, you can go out and see what's going on out there in the countryside. Go to practicalfarmers.org, and that will get you the website, and you could find out more information about what's going on, and there's more field days to come. Donna, you mentioned earlier in the show here about things you can't buy, things that you can grow small gardens.
I am not a super gardener. Mostly I have a lot of perennials and flowers, but I do grow a lot of my own herbs. But I try to grow the ones that I can't buy in the grocery store. Like, both Lana and I grow lovage and dry lovage to have all year round, because you cannot buy it for love nor money, as they say.
Things you just can't get, and you can grow it, and that's how it works. Things come from the soil. Things come from the ground.
I think last week Lana talked about harvesting your basil just about now and cutting it back so you get a new flush of it. So I went right out and I harvested my lemon basil and my Thai basil. And I just plucked the leaves off and spread them out on newspapers, and they're now drying because you cannot buy lemon basil or Thai basil also.
Right. I have a book here that kind of talks about this sort of thing. This is a book by the author Mark Diacono, A Taste of the Unexpected, How to Grow Your Own Remarkable Fruit, Vegetables, Nuts, Herbs, Spices, and Flowers. He is a master gardener. This book talks about things that make...
He's British.
British. Things that make your gardening special. And you say he is the master gardener at a place called River Cottage.
Right. It's an institution, really an institution at this point, founded by a chef called Hugh Fernley Whittingstall, who has some marvelous books, who's been a television food personality in England. And then he went, I think, in the Cornwall area and... acquired a setting which is now turned into some restaurants and cooking schools and all kinds of things to encourage home cooking and fresh cooking and the bounty of England. And a lot of it applies to American food systems. I really always enjoy his books. And so now this one is a book by his master gardener.
Right. And so he talks about how to think of a garden. And he's also growing for himself. He's growing in a small space. And he said when he first started gardening, he grew that, you know, hey, I want to put in some potatoes. I want to put in some peas and beans. And then he's decided, well, wait a minute, I don't have that much space. And he has a few words to say about that sort of thing. He encourages us to branch out and do things that you can't get at the grocery store. He says this: few of us are able to grow all our own food, yet we are quietly compelled to grow foods that will reward our efforts with the biggest yield. Potatoes, peas, beans, brassicas, root crops, and onions. And he said the first year he tried growing those, like most people, he followed the book and worked himself to a silly fit to get it all done. He said, I wouldn't recommend it. If the sun shines, you get exactly what you asked for. Perfectly respectable harvest of potatoes, onions, carrots, cabbages with a few salads. Success will taste like the dull end of your weekly shopping. He says, if that's what you dream about, that's fine. But he says a garden can be a whole lot more than just the basics. He suggests growing things that you can't get so much in the grocery store. He talks about things like don't grow food that's cheap to buy. Grow food that's expensive to buy. Treat yourself, such as transformers, things that are just small little things that make a big difference.
Yeah, like the herbs.
Yeah, grow Carolina allspice, lovage, Sicily, Szechuan peppers or other kind of peppers, or Egyptian walking onions, and grow things that you can't buy at all in the grocery store, like elderberries and mulberries and daylilies, that kind of thing. So this is a interesting and really good book. I like this. Although it's set in England, Devon, England, he talks about good things that you can get out of your garden that you can't get anyplace else. A Taste of the Unexpected by Mark Diacono. That's a fine book. And it's from Quadrille Publishing out of London. Also, great pictures. Always want books to have great pictures.
Oh, yeah, it's a beautiful book.
And recipes.
It's inspiring.
He puts in recipes. Mm-hmm. So grow those things you can't grow any other or can't get any other place. We've got some upcoming things to think about here.
Yep, busy season here in Ames. Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of eating to be done out there.
Eating, music.
Oh, yes.
And solar watching.
Oh, solar watching. This week, actually tomorrow, there's a progressive dinner happening in the town of Story City. The Story City Greater Chamber of Commerce will hold its 13th annual progressive dinner on Wednesday, August 16th. And this is not progressive dinner in people's homes. Let's talk
about that. Yeah. When I was growing up, the definition of a progressive dinner mm-hmm. was when a social set of people, and maybe you'd say six couples or mm-hmm. something like that, would plan to get together and they would go to each of the assigned houses with a different course presented by the hostess at that house. That was a progressive dinner. You progressed from one house to the other.
I like that.
So this is a communal progressive dinner.
Right. And this involves all of the businesses in Story City. 30 businesses are signed up to participate, and even businesses that aren't necessarily restaurants or food places, they're all going to have a little something out front for you to come
and
down.
And when is this?
This is Wednesday, August 16th.
Coming right up. What
right.
time?
From 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, this year's theme is Making a Splash in Story City because they're celebrating a new swimming pool and some restoration work they've done along the river park there. And
yes, it's on Main Street, right? They have a charming Main Street in Story City.
So get this. You can go up there and contact the Story City Greater Chamber of Commerce for more information. But here's menu items. And it is a splash sort of theme, a summer party theme. So menu items will include watermelon, ribs, jalapeno corn, iced latte, beef brisket, baked beans, strawberry, spinach salad, coleslaw, little smokies, of course, grilled barbecue shrimp, tiki soda pop bar cupcakes, pool party jello, pinwheels, pool dip pool water, and poolside treats, cookies, lemonade, pizza, pasta salad, and take a dip with us, dips, and meatballs. So that's Story City on Wednesday. Lots of good stuff going on. Also, coming up farther along in the month, local foods potluck from Wheatsfield Food Co-op, August 26th.
And that's in the park this year? Where is it?
Oh, that is in Brookside Park, okay. Maple Shelter. Live local music by Red's Blues Brand, of course. That's the local foods potluck. And you'd think a couple of years ago, you'd think, local foods, what is that? But now people know. We can cook up a storm. That is August 26th coming up. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Listen, Tuesdays at noon, repeat at 7 p.m., or listen anytime. So you can stream, you can download, you can go to the archives, you can attach us to your device and listen to us, the Donna Lana Kitchen. Go to khoifm.org. Today we've had music by Ann Percival and Lisa Schnechtenberger. Thanks for joining us today around our kitchen table. Enjoy the solar eclipse. Be kind to everybody out there. And be kind to KHOI. Support this nice radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food. Enjoy life.